Well, the chair likes a full room. So welcome back, everyone, and we're sorry about the delay. We have Mr. Nelson and Mr. Wilmarth with us, and we're going to discuss the ECA, and then we'll take a vote.
Madam Chairman and members of the Appropriations Committee, first I'll just point out some stuff that we prepared for you in response to your November meeting. We won't go through it. We'll make sure you got copies. But just in summary, one of them was comparing salaries in districts for different professionals as districts are paying them as they're funded in the model. We also did a chart that will show you our teacher salary and rankings. We'll get these to you later. We can even give them to you now, or we can give them to you later.
They're very needy. They like to have
okay.
them now.
We'll pass them now.
So let's take a moment to pass everything out.
Okay. And I will talk slower. The other one that we have is a actual to model staff differences. There were questions. And these, again, came up in our November time with you when we were discussing Education Committee action on the external cost adjustment and their report back to you. They were just individual committee requests that were made of us at that time. We also shared this information with members of the Education Committee. Kill a few trees. You don't want to know, really. Nothing compared to yesterday. We were just throwing it out, right and left. You should have copies of three different documents that have a number of pages stapled together.
Looks like we have the Wyoming teacher salary and rankings, actual to model staff differences, and a summary of actual Wyoming average salaries compared to Wyoming funding model.
Got them all. There you
Great.
Go.
Which one would you like to start with? Or are you not discussing any of them?
We it's up to you. We thought we would just submit them as information requested.
Okay.
They're pretty self-explanatory, and that we'll always be around. If you have questions, you can come track myself or Matt down. That said, the Education Committee, as we earlier reported, took action on the regional cost adjustment. They did not modify their October action on the external cost adjustment. Their action was unchanged that no external cost adjustment be recommended for school year 12-13. That is their report to you, and it doesn't change from the October report that was submitted to you and you considered at your November meeting.
All right.
Madam Chairman, I might point out, too, that the committee forwarded legislation, the Education Committee, that will implement both the regional cost adjustment as was presented before lunch, as well as will execute the external cost adjustment recommendation.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the letter right now from the chairman of the Education Committee. Was there a cost adjustment for energy and for materials recommended in that letter or not?
Madam Chairman, Representative Stewart, no, there was not. In the bill, there is an adjustment, but it applies only to the consultant model, the cost-based PICUS model, as we like to call it. But there was no adjustment or recommendation for the funding model as forwarded by the legislature.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Other questions of Mr. Nelson on the ECA?
Madam Chair.
Representative Harshman.
Just, I didn't see it here. Just give me a little refresher. Let's talk about ECA and kind of just in the last 5-6 years. First recalibration, then we re. Can you give me a little history on that?
We do. You're going to have to. At this point, we don't have our books with us, so it'll be off the top of our head. But.
So we recalibrate. Let's talk in terms of school years when it affected. I mean, we're sitting here 11-12. Okay, let's work backwards. So we're going to decide here in a minute on 12-13 school year. How about
10-11? Madam Chair, I don't want to interrupt Representative Harshman, but I do have the ECA numbers for the school years up to now that we have provided ECAs.
That'd be great if you can. Yeah. Can you just, are you going to rattle them off to us? Or
here we go.
When do you want to start?
Madam Chair, yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
In the fiscal year 2008, so that had been the 7-8 school year, would have been the first year after the recalibrated model in 2006-07, there was a 4.3% ECA. In the following fiscal year, there was for fiscal year 2009, there was a 3.7% ECA. And then in fiscal year 10, there was a 3.7% ECA. So there's been a cumulative ECA of about 12.27% since the first year of model implementation of 2006-07.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, so I have 4.3, 3.7, and what was the last one, Matt?
Madam Chair, it was 3.8, 4.3, and 3.7.
Hold on a minute.
Madam Chair, what's your 3.8?
Hold on. You started with 2008 at 4.3.
Madam Chair, I apologize. It was a 3.8.
Was the last one in the 10-11.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. 2008 was 3.8.
Okay.
2009 was 4.3.
Let's start over.
Start over. Thanks.
All right. Sorry, Madam Chair.
That's all right. Are we all ready?
Let's start with two.
Okay. 2008.
2008 was a 3.8%.
Excuse me, just so I'm clear, that's a 7-8 school year.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
3.8. Okay, thank you.
School year 2008-09, which was fiscal year 2008-09, was a 4.3%. And then fiscal year 2009-10 was a 3.7 for a cumulative 12.27. And Madam Chair, Chairman Nicholas, the last recalibration was last school year, last fiscal year, which was 2011. So the 2011-12 is the first year of the recalibrated model.
And we recalibrated in 2006?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, I think, and just a little more history, Madam Chair, if I just ask. I think one more question, just so I kind of have it in my mind. I mean, the whole idea was, and I've been on appropriations for all those adjustments. We've usually done them in CASPER and ZET, those means. But anyway, we chose, like, the Education Cost Index. And we were kind of told our advice at that time was to choose an index, really. I mean, the more important thing was to kind of get it right, but then stay consistent, not cherry-pick your indexes. And so I remember a couple of those years that I think it was the Education Workers Cost Index or something. Like, one year it was higher, one year it was lower, and so on. Okay, now to my question. On those days, you must have the running tally of inflation in Wyoming. Do you have those per year on that?
Matt?
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman, I do not.
Okay.
It's very difficult to determine how much of an impact an ECA has due to the fact you have increased enrollment, special ed, transportation costs that 100% reimburse, health insurance is adjusted. I mean, we can back those out, but it's very difficult just to determine just what the impact of the ECA is.
Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just I have an economist on my committee, Mike Madden, and he actually did run those numbers. I don't have that paper in front of me. There was actually one year when we actually shrunk 1.7%, I do recall. So we can get that information, but it's our understanding that we have grown the rate of spending faster than the rate of inflation.
Other questions of Mr. Nelson or Mr. Wilmorth or the chairman?
From Mr. Mai about, take us back to the school foundation program account. Talk to us about the compression that's taking place between revenues and expenses.
You want to repeat the question for Mr. Mai, please?
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, are we limiting this discussion just to SFP?
SFP and the compression on that and the impact of the Craig report on that compression.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the cumulative effect of that change in natural gas, which was, again, just to remind the committee, if you look at your Craig report, we dropped 75 cents off of the price projection in 12, in calendar year 12. 50 cents in 13 and 25 cents in 14. And not that this is completely relevant, but it is proportional. If you look at page 3 of the Green Report, of the Craig Report, you'll see a graph that we included this time to illustrate the differences in the general fund and budget reserve account that resulted from the Craig changes in January. And the reason for doing that is, unlike most Craig reports, unlike most Craig revisions, with regard to severance tax and FMRs, this report was affected only by a price change. We didn't revise production estimates. We didn't revise other minerals. All we did was revise natural gas price estimates. So when you look at those two lines, that's the effect of dropping that gas price. So a similar type of effect, although not quite to the same degree, occurs with the school foundation program account. And it gets a little complicated, and again, you know, I'm going to duck any rocks that Matt might throw my way as a result of oversimplifying the effects of recapture and all of that. But strictly from a revenue standpoint, that drop in that gas price due to the change in the assessed valuation and the FMRs that dropped out of the profile for 13-14, that dropped you about $74.4 million. And the bottom line is, right now, with your current level of expenditure for 13-14 out of school foundation program and disregarding the transfer that you see at the bottom of that account profiled on the goldenrod, $19.9 million transfers to school CAPCON for a variety of reasons in legislation. But disregarding that 19.9, you end up with expenditures out of SFP of about $1.68 billion. And that compares to your, again, roughly speaking, about $1.74 billion in revenues. So if you're looking at it from an ongoing kind of revenue picture standpoint, right now you have about $60 million worth of excess in 13-14 revenues over what your demands are to fund the SFP. So, to put that all in context, a similar price drop just in gas, you know, a similar change, if you did the same thing, if we had to revise this projection to the exact same level of magnitude, that's, again, a $74.4 million hit. That would actually drag you underwater. So we went halfway to dragging that account underwater from a standpoint, again, just from a standpoint of the revenues that flow into that account versus what your demands are coming out of it.
Thank you for that explanation. I guess, and you're seeing the phenomenon of that where typically we end up with our foundation program count hanging at 100 million, and we're now forecasted at 42 million, which means that we start the next biennium $60 million low. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that's right. It's complicated from the standpoint of that transfer to the school capital construction account, but because that transfer actually goes down. I mean, the net effect I think is actually greater than that, because if you weren't transferring money to the school capital construction account, the number you'd be looking at, or if you were transferring money in equal amounts under the two different scenarios, you've actually transferred about $18 million more under the October scenario than you do under the January scenario. So add that $18 million to your 100 bottom line. That's your total swing.
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess when folks ask what a rainy day is, that's the rainy day. When you start having to supplement that account with general fund, and that's really what, given our constitutional obligation, it may be that the LSRA is where you go to supplement that if and when we see that $74 million drop. One of the things I'm not certain about, Bill, is going forward, to what extent does the mineral reductions that you see now delay into the foundation program account? Are there delayed revenues that the next biennium we could see having an impact that's delayed?
Mr. Chairman, that's a kind of a Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, that's sort of a two-part answer. Part of it is relatively immediate, and the other part of it is a two-year delay due to that would be the assessed valuation piece of it. In other words, the 43 mills that fund schools, that's going to be a two-year delay. So the 2012 price change effect from this forecast will be felt in 14. So you still have 2 years to go to fully feel the impacts in school foundation program from this Craig change.
If your forecast stay where they are, and if you end up under gas at in the $3 range, that means not only do you have the lower forecast from the immediate stuff, but the next biennium we start to pick up the rolling effect of lower property tax, severance tax, and I guess that needs to be talked about, because right now the flip side of it is this account is being buffered from high gas prices 2 years ago.
Madam Chair,
that buffering.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. And it works the flip way too. I mean, if you were to see a $2 increase in the price of gas next year, you wouldn't feel it for 2 years after that. So, in that assessed valuation piece of that profile.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had this highlighted on my goldenrod for a couple of days, Madam Chair. And my recollection for that sweep to CapCon was that we would sweep any amounts over $100 million and leave $100 million balance. And so I guess my question, if that's true, why are we still sweeping to leave a balance below $100 million?
Madam Chairman, there's two components to this sweep. One is to fund capital construction at a certain level, and the other is to ensure that that account doesn't have a balance greater than $100 million. So the first reason why there was a transfer occurring was because there was a balance greater than $100 million. The second reason is because you now need that money under the current profile to fund all of your CapCon demands under the governor's regs.
Madam Chair, and maybe this will help answer Representative Stewart's question. You'll notice there's three asterisks on that $19.9 million transfer. The transfer from the foundation program to the capital construction account occurs on an annual basis. So in fiscal year 13, there is a balance of $119.9 million at the end of fiscal year 13. So that $19.9 million sweeps in fiscal year 13 at the end of 13 to the capital construction account. At the end of 14, that's where the $42 million balance occurs. The sweep from the capital construction account to the common school permanent land fund occurs on a biennial basis. So at the end of the biennium, that's when that sweep occurs.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And at what point do we get the analysis that shows that our demand for dollars in the school CapCon exceeds what is there to the extent that the sweep is necessary, so we can have the information necessary to allow that sweep to occur, as well as have the information to make a decision or a motion, Madam Chair, that perhaps it may be in the best interest of our school foundation account to leave that money and prevent the sweep.
Okay. Senator Phil Nicholas.
With respect to that issue, that's a statutory change, and you just let it ride. After, during the markup as the one of the last orders of business, we should, as a committee, look at the 11-12 school CapCon account and address the issue of whether or not we wanted to release or allow the normal passage of the $653 million into the Common School Permanent Land Fund holding account. And then you have, once it hits the holding account, you then make the second decision of whether or not you want to release it into the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. Once it hits the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund, it's gone. Our children and our grandchildren will get the benefit of it, but we won't. And I think we've all talked about and wanted to begin the process of building the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund, because when you look at our revenue sources, we just don't have enough investment income to draw on. We ought to be building that account. Having said that, we have to balance that, and what the discussion is, do we want to hold up some of those triggers in the budget, and if so, how much? So I don't think you have to worry about that transfer. And then, you know, there are other revenues that come in, things happen. Having said that, you have three equally important policies. One policy is holding your operating expenses. One policy is developing the resources to do your capital construction. And one policy is to build the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. And we need to balance all those things. But what we're seeing is that when you begin to start talking about a $1.6 billion operating expense, these decisions become compounding and significant. And you do, no matter what, there are revenue limitations.
So in response to that, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, then we don't have the authority in the markup process to suspend that transfer of $19 million. That's statutory. And
we do.
Oh, we do. Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Other questions? Further comments? Oh, yeah. The chairs would consider a motion.
Madam Chairman, I guess my view of it, and I've kind of expressed it to everybody, is that given the nature and where we are, that consistent with what I expect will be the markup position, is that we hold the ECA at zero, and we'll follow up that same policy when we get into the markup, because our office will be making motions, or at least I'll be making motions at that time, to zero out salary increases for state employees, for the community colleges, and for the University of Wyoming. That's about $30 million in there that was projected, but we've talked about whether or not to have 4%, 6%, 8%, or 5%, 8% cuts in an environment where revenues are going another direction, and it makes no sense to me, again, to build budgets up to have to turn around and start reducing them. And the first step is to constrain the growth and sort of hold for at least a year to see whether or not we can hold those amounts and then decide it. But based upon that, I would the motion is no ECA this year.
Is there a second? Second by Representative Edmonds. Further discussion? Representative Harshman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just you know, I asked a question about the inflation over those years we've given ECA, so I get on the look at the Wyoming WCLI and look at it, and you know, we're pretty close, really. And if you look at the first recalibration kind of period, assuming my internet research here, I'm looking at it on the state website, is right, but it's about during that first 4 years in that first cycle after recalibration, about 12.6% was the cumulative inflation. We ECA'd by 11.8%, and so it's pretty close. Now, taking into account recalibration, whether you start over where it's at, we've had about 1.9 this last year. It's pretty close, and I made my motion a couple months ago. I'm not going to make a separate motion. I'm going to actually support this motion. I think it's probably, I mean, really statewide. And sure, everybody would like to have a pay increase. I'd love to have a pay increase. And I'm sure state employees and University of Wyoming community colleges alike would. But given our revenue picture, we can probably wait one more year and just see what's going to happen. And I think what was just spoken, we've all talked about it, to give raises and come back and take cuts, somebody's going to lose their job. And you're sitting on a team in a department or agency or school, and you're looking at each other, and I got a $1,000 raise, but this guy who just came is out of a job. And I just think we can wait a little bit. We can wait a year. And maybe we can wait a few months, and we'll know more in a few weeks, maybe. So I'm going to support the motion.
Further, Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to speak against the motion, and I was hoping I could jump in with my motion from a month ago with my 1%. And when I look at the numbers, Madam Chair, Matt can correct me if I'm wrong. I think we could probably do a 1% with about $14 million. And Madam Chair, looking at these, I think we could balance that out with that $19 million sweep pretty easily. And Madam Chair, I think the discussions about the ECA got somewhat derailed through this process that we were we talking about inflation? Was there inflation? Was there not inflation? And what is our duty, our obligation to respond to that? And, of course, we got derailed again, I think, with discussions about overly funded or properly funded. And I think a co-chairman's letter to the governor and to the rest of the committee, I think, captured those thoughts quite well, and I agreed with them that in order to change our motivation for ECA at this point is not based on our duty that we've been making decisions on in the last three times I've sat in on this discussion of ECA. And again, I'd like to remind the committee that this doesn't necessarily, the way I understand the way we fund our model, doesn't necessarily mean a raise in teacher salaries. That the way we fund our small districts, we we rely on components in the model that recognizes the unique differences and challenges in our small school districts. And just how important this ECA is to maintain the integrity of our model so our small districts can continue to function at the rate that has become expected in the past. And thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking against the motion.
Okay. Senator Meyer.
Just a little clarification. When we were up in Casper, we had some preliminary figures that materials and utilities were somewhat underfunded. What is that status right now? You've broken the ECA into four components. Could you briefly say what those components are and the status is, whether they're over or underfunded?
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We do acknowledge in our school finance bill that I passed yesterday the changes that we've seen in those areas. And we acknowledge them in the consultant's model, which is the cost-based model. But as you know, it is a block grant. And if you look at the block grant in its entirety, we are still well above the cost basis. And so really that was our primary justification, other than the fact also in coupling with that is the fact that our labor market study showed that our teacher salary structure is still probably top in the nation, if not top number two, which makes our recruiting and retention top. So regardless, if you don't look at the projection at all and say we had several hundred million dollar forecast surplus, I would still argue that it doesn't justify an ECA at this point. And we're going to continue to monitor it on a year-by-year basis. To predict when we're going to intersect actual costs with the cost basis, and then that's the point to act, I would say.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chairman, I won't disagree that may be the point to act. I just wanted my question answered, and that was the four components and what the relative overfunding and underfunding was. If you have that information, if not, we'll get it later.
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chairman and Senator Meyer, we can get that for you. I don't have it with you right now, but the four components are two salary levels, the professional and the non-professional, and you have the materials and you have the utilities. Just to expand upon Co-Chair Teeter's words, the adjustments to the cost-based consultant model were very, very minor. In total, I think roughly around $3 million. The utilities one was really negligible, at a 0.2% or something, which amounted to like $180,000+. Again, that is to the cost-based consultant model. And then the materials was about $2.8 million. And recall that many components in there you significantly, through your legislatively funded model, are above levels in the consultant. Things such as computer supplies, educational materials. So I think that backs the decision made by the committee that there was sufficient funding in the legislatively funded model to cover those costs.
Well, I know there's the legislative add-ons on top of the model.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is, you know, it's what is it, $70 or $100 million more than what the model is?
Roughly
so, 100. Yeah, so yeah. We're overfunded, but we have all those add-ons. But the model itself in two areas is underfunded, but then we've added in another. Is it 70 or 90 or $100 million in legislatively directed add-ons?
Approximately
$100 million. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Can you repeat that $100 million?
100 million.
Yeah.
Right, Madam Chairman.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew we were $100 million overfunded in the model.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Representative Harshman.
Madam Chair, not that we're going to debate this thing too, but I just want to take a minute that, you know, this overfunding, underfunding, I'm going to take a drink here, but those are all policy choices. I mean, we chose to add summer school instructional facilitators, tutors. Had nothing to do with the model, and so I don't think we've overfunded anything. We've made a choice that We want to be number one in the country. And I think we've probably got a plan that will do that. I'm not saying really, I'll just say this here in front of everybody, and we've got a lot of folks can hear it, but since our first recalibration, every trend in education is moving in the right way. Every grade level, every subject, every test in pause is moving in the right direction. Dropout rates are moving in the right direction. So we're making progress. Now, do you arrive? You never arrive. It's continuous improvement, continuous pressure, continuous putting the heat on. But we're moving in the right direction. And so I guess those things that the legislators before us, some of us were involved in it, those were choices we made to really be number one. And I think that's a good goal. That's our accountability committee's goal, to be number one in the country. So appreciate the work of the education folks, and we'll continue pushing on it.
Further discussion on the motion?
I think it's accurate. I think Senator Meyer's concern is that if the overfunding is because we've added on discretionary matters, and so you've added these optional non-obligatory programs and put funding in it, and then you go back and said, well, if we had only funded the model and we had not funded those other things, would we have to adjust the model? And the discussion was, well, if the policy decision was made by our colleagues on the floor that we'd have these additional enhancements that drive up the price, are we required as a JAC to say we're not simply providing an ECA for the model, we're providing for the model plus the legislatively approved policies for these additional enhancements? And I guess the answer to me is that the budget is as much a part of the planning as is the statute. And if what it means is that districts have to lower the commitment to optional non-basket of goods items. So if you say you don't have to have a facilitator, but we put in a facilitator, and if you, for example, and if you have to lower that element, while it's harder for them to do it because it's fluid and some of those are fixed cost, so long as the total resources going in exceed the amount of the basket, we're free to recommend something lower than that statutory policy. Now, if our colleagues on the floor say, look, we meant what we said, and that is we want this ECA to be determined on all those legislative add-ons, they're free to add it on the floor. But in a sense, I think that you look at the economy, you look at our budgets, you look at the natural gas prices, the recommendation is that we hold the budget where it is. And while in some, going back to that decision, when you made the decision as a legislator to provide an add-on, to provide an additional item that's outside the basket of goods, you made it as a statutory policy, but you made it in view of what our resources were. And you're entitled to revisit those at any given time. And to the extent that it may constrain those add-ons, that's what happens when you have less money. You can be more generous when you have more money, and you can be less generous when you have less money. And there's no reason why we have to. I mean, we've had the debate, and I've thought about it a lot, and that is, are we compelled to assume all those legislative gratuities? It was intended that they would be there regardless of fiscal constraints, and I come up with the answer is no, because I was there and I voted for those. I voted in light of what the resources were at time, and what we see here is our total funding does exceed the basket of goods, and there will be constraints on some of these additional items, and that's what happens when you have budget tightening.
Any further discussion?
Madam Chairman, just
Senator Hassard,
can I get the motion repeated, please?
The motion is to accept JEC's recommendation of zero ECA. Okay, question being called. Roll call, please, Don. You mean yes?
Aye.
Okay. Staff, do you have anything further for us? Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. All right. Next up is F, School Facilities Commission. Department, that's correct. We have a new name change. Ian is of a new era. Okay, Phil. So we have an hour. All right, Mr. Co-Chairman and I have a meeting that's to start at 4, but we don't want to rush you, but we do want to be efficient. I know. So, now, Director, you have a lot of new faces in the background today. You might just tell me what those groups all are.
Madam Chair, as you know or may not know, we had our School Facilities Commission meeting this morning. A lot of the district superintendents are in Cheyenne for the meeting, and they came along to attend this meeting. I also am very honored to have, again, with me Chairman Carrier, Commissioner Monteith, Commissioner Schmidt is also here today.
Good. Thank you.
You may
want to just, I know we need to move, but just to let us know who the directors are, because regional people.
Madam Chair, today with me, I have Diane Bailey, administrator. And I'm sorry, did I?
No, that's okay.
Diane,
your regional folks.
Madam Chair, we have some district superintendents here. I don't know exactly all of them who are here, but I would be happy to do that. I have Alex Ayers from Campbell County, mm-hmm. business administrator.
Okay.
Superintendent Snyder from Fremont 25.
Okay.
Dr. Recht from Albany County.
Okay.
Dr. Stock from Laramie County. Mark Antrim is here from Natrona County. Michelle Hoffman from Fremont. 14. I'm sure I've missed someone.
They could jump up.
I'm sorry, Jerry Chase from Sublet 9.
Great, good. Thank you and welcome. All right. If you would like to start.
Madam Chair, we would certainly like that. I appreciate the chance again to be here today. We briefly had a chance to start last Friday. We did bring back the information that was asked for, and I believe that has been handed out to you.
Okay.
So, if Madam Chair, if you would like, we can go through our budget document, if that's how you would like to proceed.
Yeah, we do need to finish up your budget document.
Okay. Madam Chair, I will ask Diane Bailey, she is my business administrator, to help me walk through that. So, Diane, if you would, please.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair. With your permission, we could start on page 10, which is our first budget. That's our operations budget, unit 0101. This budget actually has a standard budget. This budget has all of our positions and funding necessary to run the department. The governor's recommendation on the standard budget, there's a small change. He recommends that some ITD costs and some telecommunication costs be moved over to the OCIO ITD agency. And then he recommended approval of the standard budget. At the bottom of that page is our exception budget for priority number 6, computers and printers. We asked for $28,441. In the governor's recommendation, he indicated that the OCIO would have the ability to obtain better pricing, so he reduced it by $17,634. That's the recommended approval, and denial of the $10,807, which would be the savings.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Continue.
All right. Our next budget is found on page 15. This is our planning projects, and it's unit 0206. There's no standard budget for this this unit, but we did have an exception budget request. That's priority 7, which is our planning projects. In the table below, you'll find a funding justification that explains each one of those. We've broken it out into fiscal year 2003 and 2004, and then there's a biennial total on the right side. I'm sorry, what did I say? Oh, 13 and 14, sorry, living in the past. And that goes until page 19. I will say that starting on page 17, there's some blanks in the funding justification, and I believe that that was a formatting issue in IBARS, and it's just a continuation of the last one that's printed.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Hartson.
Just a quick question then. When you get to page 19, the $820,000. Now, are these – I see a lot of times that planning dollars don't get spent. I mean, are we planning on – we appropriated as – are these planning dollars going to go to these folks and we're going to get to work on these, or –
Madam Chair, these dollars are specifically addressed to help us with our capacity studies that have been outlined in the Senate File 16 last year, Representative Parchman. So these will be used to assess, help us assess capacity needs in districts.
Okay.
And the total for that is $820,000. The governor's recommendation on page 20, he recommends the entire $820. I will also mention that it refers to school foundation funds, but each time it refers to that, it should be school capital construction funds.
Okay, good. And Director Cattler, did you want to mention here the as you assess the different accounts, if there was... Isn't this where you needed additional funds?
Madam Chair, that would become apparent in the design and the construction funds.
Okay.
The planning funds are adequate as
they're
we
adequate.
See them. Yes, ma'am.
Good. Committee, any other questions on planning? All right. Great. Continue.
Our next budget is on page, if I'm not missing something, on page 22. This is our design projects, and it's unit 0207. There's no standard budget for this, and there is an exception budget for our priority 8. As before, you will see the funding justification for each of those broken down in the 2 years in the biennium and then the biennial total. And that continues until page 24. The total request is for $8,895,987. The governor recommended approval of that and from the school capital construction projects. I mean funds, excuse me.
Mr. Madam Keller. Chair, if I may. Last Friday, Senator Nicholas and yourself had, and with along with me, had a conversation realizing some costs that have come in recently in bids and project estimates from consultants we have seen. We've come to realize that some of these projects have been underestimated. In your handouts today, we have provided that information.
Okay, and let's get the handout.
Committee members, the handout looks like this, and it's on the second page. It is entitled School Facilities Department Design. If I could point out to you when you get to that page, the blue items are below the governor's recommendation, and the items up from there are in the governor's recommendation. So what we tried to do then is go back to realize the costs that we're seeing today and adjust these budgets for that. As you can see at the bottom, there is approximately $4.497 million short in design funds, and so we thought we would bring that to your awareness today.
Okay. All right, so we have that figure, so that's something for us to consider as we're doing markup then. Any other questions of Director Cattleer on this? Okay. Continue, Ms. Bailey.
Madam Chair, on page 26 is our construction projects, and it's unit 0208. There is no standard budget for this unit. There is an exception request for priority number 2, and this also has the funding justifications each year in the biennium broken out individually and then a total. It continues on until page 28. The biennial total request for that is $246,961,989. On the page 29, the governor recommends the approval of that amount from school capital construction funds.
Madam Chair, as a follow-up, the same line of thought that we had talked about on the design funds, again, with new information and updated costs, we have tried to forecast what the estimated amounts for construction costs would be. We have allowed for inflation on a projected schedule of when these projects would be built, but the total, as you can see, committee members as well. Again, the same format. The governor's recommendations are above the blue projects, and the total page is the select committee and the school facility commission projected budget. So we have a representative shortfall of $64,994,000.
Questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just give me one second here. All right, continue.
Madam Chair, on page 32, this is our contingency unanticipated unit. It is unit 0406, and there's no standard budget. There is an exception budget, priority number 4. These funds are needed when conditions change during the design or construction phase, and we're currently figuring those at a 4% level. If you look on page 33, we're asking for $10,245,928, and the governor recommends approval of that amount from school capital construction fund. Okay. On page 35 are our demolition projects, and this is unit 0407. No standard budget for this unit. We have an exception budget for priority 12. This also shows the funding justifications, and on the right-hand column, the 2013-14 biennial totals. The total request is for $102,240, and the governor recommended approval of that amount. Okay. Continuing on to page 38, these are for our land purchases, unit 0408. There's also no standard budget for this unit. The exception budget request is for priority number 5, and the funding justification is shown below. There are no amounts. There's a total amount on page 40, and that total amount requested is $15,322,301, and the governor recommended approval of this through the school capital construction funds.
Okay.
Okay. And on page 42 is our ancillary facilities. This is unit 0409, no standard budget. There's an exception budget request for priority number 10, also showing the funding justification, and the total amount requested for that on page 43 is $1,412,000. The governor recommended approval of that amount as well. And then on page 45 are our track projects. This is unit 0410, no standard budget. The exception budget is priority 9. And it shows the funding justification, and the total exception budget request is $450,000. On the next page, the governor recommended approval of that as well. On page 48, these are our component projects, unit 0411, and there's no standard budget for this unit. The exception budget request is for our priority number 3. Below, there's on this one, there is a category column, and then there's a legend following that telling you what those categories indicate. And the total on that is on page 49, and that is $5,796,000. On the next page, the governor recommended approval of that as well.
Okay. And that's correct. Okay. Continue.
On page 53, this is our major maintenance budget, unit 0501. There is a standard budget request driven by statute that's mentioned in the narrative, and that is $82 million currently. And then there is an exception budget request for our number one priority, and information regarding that below. The total exception request is for $19,231,513. On page 54, the governor recommended the approval of the exception budget request. And I'm sorry, I skipped over it, but back on page 53, he also recommended the approval of the standard budget of $82 million. And on page 57 is our engineering and technical service contracts. This is our unit 0601. There's no standard budget request. We do have an exception budget request, priority 11, and these are for during the development of the process to assess school facilities, to prioritize spending for facilities and ensure efficient and effective school designs. We sometimes use value engineering teams or site survey specialists, educational facility specialists, and others. And we do also mention that starting this fiscal year, we will begin compliance audits with an independent auditing firm and prior to closeout. The total on page 58, the total requested is $6,069,153, and the governor recommended approval of that amount.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Bailey? Representative Stewart?
Madam Chair,
I have a question perhaps that would go back to some of the construction projects, if that would be allowed at this time.
Sure. So you want to go back to, let's see here, page starting on page 15. No, hold on.
26,
yes.
In the CapCon?
Mm-hmm.
My question, Madam Chair, I spent a lot of time with a lot of good reading material over the weekend, and in fact, some of the reading material I came across would lead me to believe that the CAP school in Natrona County is being resourced as an alternative school. And of course, I'm reminded of, in our statutes, the moratorium on new alternative schools. And I guess my first question is the new CAPS facility being proposed in Natrona County being resourced as an alternative school?
Mr. Cataldir.
Madam Chair, the CAPS facility is not an alternative school. I hope I get the acronym right. It's the Center for the Advancement of Professional Studies. There is an alternative high school. Representative Stewart, Roosevelt High School is included in part of this project, but the CAPS facility and the Roosevelt High School are two different entities. I am unaware of a moratorium on alternative high schools. This project became a project 2009, I believe. I could stand to be corrected on that, but so that's what I do know about the Roosevelt, the alternative high school.
Follow up?
If it's not an alternative school, what is it?
Madam Chair, I believe the name would represent what it is, what its intent is. It's a, and I'm sorry, this is not my expertise. It is a Center for Advanced Professional Studies, so I'm quite sure that your colleague, Mr. Harshman, could probably explain this better than I could.
Nice punt.
It happens in here sometimes.
And the issue is whether if we make this decision to fund it, will that increase any type of, any part of your model
mic.
Components?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I just wanted to refer, and some of this information I got from my good neighbor here, just to read from one of the handouts he prepared for me. It says, program spaces and square footages for Roosevelt High School and CAPS were developed using the alternative school guidelines.
Madam Chair, that may be correct. We do not have specific alternative high school guidelines. We have built alternative high school guideline. We have built alternative high schools. And so we are, until we adopt guidelines for alternative high schools, we have used those as a point of reference. So the square footage allowables, I believe, are what is referred to there, Representative Stewart, as far as what was figured for those students in that CAPS facility. I see that I probably did not answer your question.
Well, I guess, Madam Chairman,
yes, go ahead.
It's easier than that. Is Matt back there? Matt is back there. Matt, I guess, can you provide us the assurances that by funding this third facility that it will or will not affect their funding? I mean, are they gaming the system?
Mr. Wilmar.
Madam Chair, Chairman Nicholas, how the funding model works is that it's model ADM driven and it's square footage driven. I don't believe we've worked out the nuances on how this will be funded within the block grant. But I don't know that they'll be gaming the system. The square footage that they are using for this is being taken out of the square footage allotment for Natrona and KW. So the square footage that's allocated to those schools for those students, the number of students that they think will be in this CAPS facility is taken out and put into the square footage for that. So I'm not sure that it's a game of the system.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Yes, certainly, Director.
What we did is we took the square footage allowable for those students. Their home school is Natrona and Kelly Walsh. They are figuring on a particular amount of students attending this CAPS facility. So if the number was 500, then 250 of those kids, their home school is Natrona. The square footage that they're allowed at Natrona would then be built for the CAPS facility. So it is not an additional facility. They have to utilize the CAPS facility to house their students.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think maybe Representative Harshman could give us I need a further explanation of exactly what CAPS is. We've determined that it may or may not be an alternative high school. I don't think I'm hearing that it is a traditional high school. What is it?
And before Representative Harshman, can we have a response from Matt Wilmarth, please?
Madam Chair, just to clarify my last response, I don't think in the funding model that the CAPS facility will be funded as a separate facility. It'll still just be those two high schools, KW and Natrona. Those students who attend CAPS will be counted amongst their home school, either at KW or Natrona or Roosevelt, one of those schools. So we're not going to fund CAPS as a separate school within the block grant model, if that makes any sense.
So the funding ends up being between Natrona and KW.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And any students who would attend there from Roosevelt.
So while we're on that topic, could you remind me of there was the issue between, I think, whether we're going to go the 2A or the 2B. Process. The commission or the staff was recommending 2A.
Madam Chair,
Director.
The staff and the commission have recommended, it's somewhat of a hybrid, but it is the 2B model, which would be a staggered start of the projects versus a start them all at once process.
Is that the only difference between the two?
Or Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, there will be some, that's really basically the only difference between the two. There are some cost differentials that are to be discussed between the two models, but I believe they're basically the same other than the staggered start.
I guess maybe going back to the last discussion we have, I mean, is the only difference between us, whether it's 2A or 2B, is how the projects are to be staggered and how the swing space is to be configured?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I believe that is the bulk of it, yes, sir.
But the staff's position was to use old KW for swing space?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that was a recommendation from the project architects back in June. We're not far enough into these projects to finally determine that. There's a lot of work to be done to make sure what is the most effective way to get that done. This was an overview that we asked for the select committee so that we had an idea of what the scope might be and what the cost might be. So this was their an early study of how they thought this project might go.
Well, suppose we want to give you the power to stagger the projects as you think is appropriate for the best interest of the Wyoming worker in the state, which may stagger it, but we also want to say, look, we're really not interested in using KW as a swing space given what the city's position is. And I understand what they're saying. That's a ton of people in one area. So is that a hybrid of the two, if that's what our position is?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I believe that we're too early on to understand what the temporary housing of the students might be. As you saw or heard, the feedback from the city was they weren't excited about having all those students at KW. To me, it makes sense that if we don't have to build temporary space, we shouldn't. However, if that's not doable, then we need to find another way that works for the district.
Senator Meyer?
So I'm just looking at some of the stuff here as far as excess allowable square footage. And it looks like Natrona has 412,740 excess square feet in their plan right now. What will they have after these buildings are built?
Senator Meyer, I guess it would help me if I knew the document you were referring to.
It's a document that's on the website. It says proposed draft, School Facilities Commission allowable actual educational square footage 2011.
Madam Chair.
Excess square footage by district, and Natrona has 410 or 12,000, 21%. Excess square footage, educational square footage.
Representative Harshman.
Just before we get too far, I just want to, could I back up and just answer her question, Representative Edmonds? And then I'll come. Would that be okay, Madam Chair?
No, that's fine.
She asked really the difference on the cap. It's a shared facility for Kelly Walsh and NC, and there might be other kids. We have a couple other special programs for in the district for kids who have dropped out, drug abuse, those kind of things that smaller towns don't really deal with, but it's an issue in our town. So that's the CAPS facility. Now, square footage is a block grant, just like the funding model block grant. So we get our block grant for our 3,800 high school kids, and then we take 250 from Kelly Walsh and 250 from NCHS, and we make a 500 seat building at CAPS. So we make NCHS and Kelly Wall smaller. So there's no extra square footage or enhancement, that would be called. Okay? That's all that is. As far as an alternative school, that refers to the funding model where we fund in the regular model one teacher per 21 high school kids. In an alternative school, it's funded one teacher per seven children. And so as soon as we enacted that back in 05, boom, 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 these started popping up, and so they put a moratorium on it. So that's that issue on that deal. As far as the excess square footage, just my limited knowledge kind of the district. You have Kelly Walsh has 310,000 square feet. It's one of the biggest buildings in the state, and it's mostly hallways. If you've ever been in that building, it's like an indoor aircraft hangar. I mean, it's just hallways. And so Midwest is another school that probably capacity 500-600 kids has 100 kids from, you know, a small town that's kind of shrunk. So those are a lot of those issues. But I don't know if I had any help there. But if you look at the capacity study on the Fanning Howey report, that this bad boy that we paid $360-some per page for, it goes in pretty detailed on all the high school facilities, and we're over 100% capacity on our high school buildings. Where there's a little flex is in the middle schools, so there's a little room for growth. But it's so that's kind of it, and it's a big system, and you get a couple thousand feet here, a couple thousand, then you got the Midwest Kelly Walsh thing. Pretty soon you got a lot of square footage.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Senator Von Slater.
I guess this would be the matter anybody that could possibly answer. Do we have a definition of an alternative school? I think if we don't, we should. I mean, other than to say, well, we'll fund it this way or fund it that way. That shouldn't be the definition.
That's why we quit doing it.
Madam Chair.
Matt.
I'll try to answer this to the best of my abilities. An alternative school is just an alternative learning environment for students that districts identify not to, I guess, learn, but they have a different environment than the regular classroom, and so they are in this alternative learning environment. That could be within its own school, or we have 15 districts that have alternative schools, which are separate buildings. So it's just an alternative learning environment for that student. Representative Harsham is correct that we do fund them on a one teacher for every seven students, but that includes all staff for that school, and they also get an assistant principal position for that. So the definition of alternative school, there's been a couple of reports, one in 2008 and one in 2009 from the State Department of Education that tried to really define what that alternative school is. They brought those back to the Joint Education Committee. And it's still a struggle to this day on determining what that alternative school is and what students should be served. And after those reports, the Education Committee continued to keep the moratorium on developing new alternative schools because there still has not been a good definition from the state on how to define what that is. So that's where we are today is there's a moratorium definition on how to serve those students. It's difficult to grasp what that is.
Madam Chair, if I can follow up on that. Matt, you sort of described charter school, too. So I think as an interim thought here or a thought for the interim.
I'd take a crack at that.
Ed or something, maybe they ought to write a definition or work on, because I can see building a school that's maybe you could claim is not an alternative school, but sort of is an alternative school. And so
Representative Harshman and
Madam Chair,
Representative
Edmund. I think part of the issue here is the really alternative schools are populated by mainly at-risk students, a large group with different educational offerings. We do have a definition in statute of at-risk students, and it's here. It's those students who free and reduced lunch, limited English proficiency, and mobile students who move from town to town to town. And that's what we've used in statute to computate at-risk funding. And so you're right. I mean, Gillette has an at-risk or an alternative school, but that was the thought behind it. But it quickly started to grow, and I think as policymakers, it's time out before we start funding these at 1 to 7.
I know.
So,
can I take Edmund's amendment?
Can I run this?
Chairman,
I don't want to preamp this thing, but I mean, we got to get moving, and I've got about four pages of what I'd like to see as put into a draft Section 300 to be debated during markup. But on the Citrona issue, my belief is that with the commission recommendation of 2B, there's really two heartburns with it. One is, what is the student population? How is that to be calculated? And I'm going to address that in a separate discussion later. But if we said, look, the Trona project will be funded on the basis of option that allows for staggered construction, but also provides for the participation by Natrona County School District Number 1 in the planning and contribution of the school district's resources for the cost of swing space. So making sure that, look, if the state thinks it's best interest to stagger them one after another, that's fine. But it's a different issue about what you do with the swing space. If you have a budget for swing space and Natrona comes in and says, look, we'll contribute to that. We're going to build a massive gymnasium or a field house so that when we're done, Coach Harshman can run around in the winter. That's okay. What do we care? As long as they do it with their resources. And then as the other element I've had here is part of this adopting the solution, we want the Natrona County School District Number 1 to agree in advance that the CAPS facility will be treated as normal high school space footage and not as an alternative to high school. If we do that, does that drive us to what you're needing and give you the flexibility that you're looking for?
Madam Chair, I believe it does. I believe the Natrona has done a good job of defining what they're going to do at the CAPS facility, and it is clearly not an alternative high school.
So, Madam Chair, if that solves both of the issues and that can narrow the discussion, that's in what I'm working up here, that will be my proposed resolution of that issue. So we say, look, you get to drive the construction with a lot of issues, and whether it's sequential, part of that has as much to do with the workforce in Casper. It's not just about Natronin. It's not just about what they want. We have a workforce that's involved, and we don't want to have to supply, build this building without out-of-state workers. And we know that there's other projects going on in Casper, and we want you to control that. And if you think that it's in the best interest to put them at the same time, that's you're going to control that. With respect to the swing space, though, Casper has a horse in that race. And, you know, we've all been there. I've spent a lot of time at KW and at Natronin with kids over the years. And I have to agree, putting 4,000 kids there is close to insanity. I'd agree with that. And I think, given time, you'd probably come there too. But my point there is Natrona gets, and the community gets to deal with that. But also, as I understand, Natrona has offered their own resources to provide swing space. Take them up on it. Make them spend it. And if they end up with a facility, as long as they're paying for it, who cares? And then finally, if we just, instead of debating, I mean, I don't know if I'm a fan of the CAPS facility, but what I do know is that they have vetted that as much as it's been in any project. And it may be a bad idea, but in the end, all we care is that they agree that it's part of their space. They're not getting anything extra. That we may get pegged in busing, fair enough, but, you know, we do that. They're an open enrollment school. That's a debate we're not going to earn today or we're solved today. That's a different issue. But with respect to all other purposes, it will be funded as normal high school space in the block grant and not as an alternative school. So we take all those things off the table and we move forward. So my question is, before we get into debating the CAPS and busing and stuff like that, if we do something like that, does that take care of your needs, Director?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I think you stated it very well. These projects, the swing space is going to be the difficult issue here. How do we accommodate
these? We're not going to solve that today.
No, we're not.
But if they want to add resources, that's fine, and you'll do your regular budget resources.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, as I stated before, this is early on, and these details will be worked out. But, yes, sir, the swing space can be.
Before you continue.
Representative Harshman, does that kind of take care of the issues that you think that are outstanding, or something else that we need to decide to essentially arbitrate in advance potential disputes?
I don't think the folks in Casper care about. I mean, there are a lot of folks who care about getting these going at the same time. I think the main thing in Casper is we want to get going.
Okay, well, you guys don't get to decide, though.
No, I mean, we want to get the project. Right now it's stalled, and so if staging is part of it, I think everybody's good with that.
Because I read your paper, there are some contractors in town that don't want it.
No, if you ask me if staging is okay, in my mind, yes, staging is okay. All right. Probably don't speak for everybody in Casper, but I'm representing a pretty good crew of them.
And
so
my next question is, does what I wrote and read there capture what you think is needed to go forward, or is there something else we have to address?
I think that's most of it right there. I mean,
no,
the swing space.
Most of it.
Well,
does
I think that's
yes
it.
No?
I'm just the city won't allow 4,400 people.
I just resolved that.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that's huge. I think it's in there.
Okay,
so you
asked
me
else?
At this time, I can't think of anything else,
thank
Mr.
You.
Chairman. Thank
that's
you.
All I'm looking at.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, couldn't we tweak that also during markup?
We can. I just want to get started.
The basics, right. Okay, good. Now, Senator Von Slater.
Okay, I just want to clarify whether or not Senator Nicholas just told them to use swing space if Natrona wants to join into that, and it's their problem, but it's our maintenance and square footage. Does that fall under their model after they're done
no,
with this?
No, anything they pay for is on them.
All the way through afterwards?
That's right. If they add swing space at their expense, then it's on their nickel forever.
Okay, and also, did you say to consider that, or did you say to do that?
Pardon me?
Senator Nicholas, did you say to do that or consider that?
Consider that.
Director Cattelier?
Madam Chair, if this additional space, if it ends up that way, is considered an enhancement, it would be the district's responsibility. They would be able to use 10% major maintenance funds on an enhancement.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you. Real quickly, and I don't want to belabor this, but where are they finding these extra nickels? I mean, we're talking about a funding formula that I think, you know, earlier we talked about funding formula skewed in favor of the smaller districts. Here's one that's skewed in the favor of the larger districts and big time. And I've got a problem with that, with schools that are able to enter lease agreements with communities for pools. Where are they finding these nickels?
Senator Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, that's a good discussion, but I'll tell you, we're not going to solve this, but let me give you an example. South High School here in town, my recollection is a ballpark each cost about $80 million, and there are about $10 million worth of enhancements. And as I understand it, this community was able to park $1 million a year, set it aside out of their budget to pay for those enhancements. They didn't have to go to the voters. They didn't have to go out anywhere. And now, are we paying for that through larger class sizes? I don't know. I guess so. And is it fair that that the large communities are able to pull out of their budget sufficient amounts that they can go to put $10 million of enhancements in their high school, and smaller communities, including my own, will have to go to a bond issue to pay for it, because there's no way in honest earth that our community could pull out $1 million a year for 10 years to set aside for enhancements. Is it disturbing? Yes. Are we going to solve it today? No.
Well, just to drive it home, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, and I'll stop here. But it does make a difference. When we talk about tracks, six-lane versus eight-lane, smaller, bigger, mm-hmm. rubberized, non-rubberized, I had one of my constituents come up and say, why is my daughter's knees under less valued than the larger girl's knees, school's knees? And so, you know, you get questions like that as a state senator, and you don't know how to answer. You just say, you know, we can't build rubberized tracks for everybody. And, of course, his comeback was just not here. So, but then when you hear stories on the flip-flop of larger schools having that kind of extra cash, something's seriously wrong with our funding formula.
Okay. All right. Representative Edmonds, did you want to comment on anything? And then I'll go to Representative Parchman.
Madam Chair, the one comment I just wanted to make, and I couldn't resist, was this good Senator von Flatiron's discussion of charter schools. And I'll just point out one slight difference, and that would be, while alternatives and charters would certainly have a different sort of learning environment, a charter school would have a totally different governance.
Okay, great. And Representative Parchman.
Well, I think some of the things that are available in Casper that probably smaller communities, first of all, the rec mill is huge to us. You know, I know Campbell County is huge. They build some beautiful recreation facilities, tracks. So that's one thing, you know. So there's other sources that we can get through just leveraging our local governments that maybe aren't available to some folks. So.
And just so I can be on the same level with my good co-chairman is that school District 1 in my community of Bighorn, we did have to issue a bond, and we only have a four-lane track. All right, Senator Nicholas, your next comment. That's it for now? All right.
I think that
we're
gets,
on projects, basically, construction projects.
Well, I've got a whole – I mean, I think you just keep moving through and
– Well, we're – okay.
Ian needs to explain the cost increase. Did you explain those yet?
You want to go through the handouts that you gave us that we have not covered?
Madam Chair, I would like to do that if you'd so please.
Sure.
Again, committee members, look on the first page of this document if you would. During the past several years, we've seen a decrease in construction costs. We're starting to see a little bit of a change in that trend. Budgets over the past couple of years have been developed on a statewide average, which I understand and agree that it does not meet statute, but this is what was done. So if you would look on page one of this handout and just to the right of the highlights, column titled Total Construction Dollars. Per square foot. For an example, on line number 2, Campbell Westward Alternative High School, that was budgeted at $211 a square foot. We understand today, if you go over to the column besides the notes, those prices really are going to be about $272 a square foot. So you can follow those columns down, and you can see how that affects all the projects that we have on our current budget list. And again, I apologize for not having this information updated prior. We have just come to understand what our trends are. In Converse County last week, we had a bid opening. Construction costs were at $201. So some of these projects, we just don't want to get in a position now where we have projects that are underfunded. We have projected possible start dates for these projects and added inflation to those costs as we see them today. If they go out further into the future, we would have to add some inflation costs to those as well. But this is our best guess. I do feel pretty comfortable with these numbers and increases. They do reflect what we are seeing from the Fanning and Howey study in Casper, along with recent costs on South High School. So
okay,
our original costs were just too low, Madam Chair.
Okay. Questions on that? All right, continue.
Madam Chair, if I could, I believe you and I, along with Senator Nicholas, have spoken about past projects. We have several here, and I'm sorry you don't. The members do not have this information.
You can get that for us.
But we will get that for you. It is from the supplemental budget last year. There are several projects that are underfunded, and the total of that underfunding is $11.994 million.
Madam Chair, could you just rattle those off, those projects real quick? How many are there?
The name
five
of
or
the
six?
Projects. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just name them real quick.
Madam Chair, I could. Uinta number 4 middle school. Sublette 9 elementary school. Natrona number 1 elementary school. Laramie number 1 elementary school. Sweetwater 1 middle school. Converse County Elementary School, Johnson Number 1 Elementary School.
Other questions of Mr. Cattelier on this? Okay. And so, Ian, you'll go ahead and get a copy of that to us.
Madam Chair, I will. Thank
Great.
You.
All right. Continue.
Would you do me a favor? Would you make about 20 copies of that?
Madam Chair. I guess one thing that we do need to talk about.
Yes.
Is the effective immediately funding request that we have. This will help us in the costs that we have just represented, especially the underfunded amounts.
And that's handout number 173.
That has been handed
out. Right, go ahead.
Again, this is an effort to get our capacity studies underway more quickly and cover the some of the projects that are underfunded so that we can get those projects underway.
And we have staff recognizes this so that we do not. Okay.
The total of this request for immediate funding is represented on page 4, and we would ask for $42,949,761 to be made available at the end of the session, if possible.
Okay. Any questions on that? All right, continue.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not sure where we need to go from here.
I think we... What's that?
Let's talk about the point.
Oh, yes, that's where we're at. So we'll go back and just discussing construction projects or new projects, and Representative Pedersen would like to discuss the elementary school at the point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I pass this piece out to you. It's up on top of your boxes if you'd like to take a look at it with me. No, but I can, maybe I have an extra.
I'll just give
it to you. Okay. Sure. What brought a lot of this conversation on was originally way back in Cheyenne. We have a real overcapacity issue in a lot of our grade schools, and that's what's illustrated right here on this first page. And you can see here that we're broken up into three different triads based on where you'll end up going to high school. And you can see our current funding our current capacity status, and then what would happen if we went to the 16-to-1 ratio of the student-teacher ratio. And many of our schools right now are already over the 100%. But as you move forward and we move closer to that 16-to-1, which we've said is our goal, we really start to get to a massive capacity issue. That was recognized originally when they put together the needs index priority, and then this committee voted for it. And we put together a project, and when you look at the 2010 session laws, Chapter 39, Section 333, we appropriated $16,098,021 for Laramie No. 1 Elementary School, Prairie Wind Elementary, according to the 2009 Needs Index Priority No. 14. That included $50,000 for planning, $1,019,146 for design, and $15,028,875 for capital construction. And then according to the School Facilities 2011 Annual Report, there's a total of $14,001,573 left in the budget right now. What happened with this and why this happened is I got a series of calls from constituents, and there were originally three sites looked at for this particular facility, one being in a district in Cheyenne called The Point, one being on Ridge Road, and then there's a current ideal for a site way out on Torrington Highway. And originally, you have some different things set up in Cheyenne. If you look on the very, very last page, I have a color layout of the subdivision in Cheyenne where this would go, including where that would be. And you have 700 homes there, and you have a series of kids who now go, if you look at your capacity comparison, I've made a line next to each one of the schools that are four. There are four schools where each one of the kids are currently going to out of that development alone. Well, originally, and you're busting all around. Originally, this site was not chosen. It was 6 point. Yes, sir. Oh yeah, thank you.
Now that's your breath, breathe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm told that all the time on the floor. So, originally there was a site that was originally planned. The Point had come forward and wanted a school there with families and pieces, but that was originally looked at and really didn't work out. And for a series of reasons, they were worried about the acreage, they were worried about the land development, a whole series of things. And so the second place that was chosen was on Ridge Road. And that site had a whole lot of pushback on it from a former AG, assistant AG, and a series of people who were worried about traffic, wells, draining aquifers, the septic piece that would be there, light pollution, a whole series of things. Because when people move out of the city limits, they don't expect to be near a school. People who live in the city limits expect to be near a school. And then what happened is that piece on Ridge failed, and then it came back up, and the people in the Point competed again, once again, and they went to a series of school board meetings, aired their views. They felt that they were not being heard, and so the school board said, call your legislator, and so they all did, and I had full email accounts and full cell phone calls and people mailing me all these wonderful things. Well, my senator, Senator Ross, and I went through this issue. Well, one of the things that's charged on this is now we're moving way out to a big 20-acre piece out north of town, and we're going to have to do septic, and we're going to have to do a well. Well, when you look here, and on your second page in, I put in a bunch of the statute, and 21-3-10 says that the school board shall fix the site of each school building and facility considering the needs of the people in each portion of the district. Well, I don't think that people need to be bussed out to go to a school, and I think that taking in the needs of the district is the need of people to be close and feel like a community with their school. And then when you move down below that, the School Facilities Commission is charged to develop criteria and procedures for site analysis of remedies responding to identifying the building's needs, which include site, soil conditions, traffic patterns, utilities, and topography. And then furthermore, they're required to have 4 usable acres with an additional acre for each 100 students. I have, below this, I have the corresponding two sheets. One is a topography piece. One is from an engineering firm called AVI. You actually have the, who that is in your handout today in your 900 series. It's the third one down. It's one of the engineering pieces. It was Director Cavalier who said that they don't have in-house. They would like to make it in-house, but this is where they are currently getting. And when you have the topography map, there's really about 9.15 to 9.2 acres that are less than a 5% grade, probably close to a 3% grade. And when you see AVI's piece on the platting, zoning, engineering, the fact that all the utilities are available on the site, sewer and water line, and where the grading takes place, and then my final piece.
Ian, is there any reason why that point property cannot be used for the school or is not suitable?
Director Kettler.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, the districts are charged to...
My question is, from your point of view, is there any reason why that site is not suitable for school?
That site is not suitable for this school. That site is not suitable for 506 students.
If upon a waiver, could it be made? What's it missing? How many acres is it missing to have a three-section school?
I believe, and I don't want to be quoted here, but I believe we have to have 9.3 acres for 506 students. I don't believe that there's some dispute on what the usable acres on this site is, but I believe it's about 9. The difficulty with the site is it's long and narrow. It's not really conducive to a good facility plan on that, and there are some questions about the grades.
When you say it's not suitable, obviously there are provisions for a waiver. Is that correct?
Senator Nicholas, I would expect that could go before the commission for an exception.
My question is, can you make exceptions?
Madam Chair, I believe the commission can make exceptions.
Okay, and in this instance, if you want, is it satisfactory for a two-section facility?
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on that, but I would believe so.
Okay. Now, if the issue is whether you can put a three-section elementary school there, as a practical matter, just you and me, without holding you to it, can you see any reasons why you could not work with the space and give an exception or a waiver and still come out with a satisfactory product for the community?
Madam Chair, I believe that a smaller school could fit on that site. But as Representative Peterson has shown quite clearly here, that need will not address the capacity that the district has as the three-section school will. So truthfully, the district needs this three-section school to address the immediate capacity needs, and they do need an additional school. If that's at the site, at the point site that's being discussed here, I believe that's a possibility.
Okay. Okay.
I have something.
Yeah. Good. Wait one second. Let's see. Director Kettler, did you have anything else to add at the moment?
Madam Chair, I do not.
Okay. Now,
Chairman, I think we've essentially gone through the agency budget, have we not? Everything's been covered.
Correct.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
All right. Obviously, we're going to deal with this in markup, but it would be helpful to have a markup piece of Section 300 prepared in advance that we can debate paragraph by paragraph at markup. But so I would like to get sort of a consensus of whether this is where the group is heading, so that if we want to have alternatives prepared, that's fine. But in the gist of what I would like to have the staff do is prepare a Section 300 that accommodates the following. One is that we would provide for a reserve account of $12 million available for shortfalls created by the actual contracted cost increases of the older schools that are on the list that are identified by Director Kettler. Second, that we would adopt the Select Committee recommendations for 100% funding of all the projects on that list, excepting the Midwest School, which is to be omitted. I don't have it there, but the amount to be put in the budget is the amended amounts that are provided today by Director Cattler, so that another $65 million. Three, that we would provide that capacity for the new facilities that are to be built under this budget will be based upon the projected enrollment at 5 years from or following the date of the forecasted date of occupancy. So that's sort of a compromise, but what we don't want to do is be building buildings that are obsolete the day they're occupied. Fourth, we would provide for effective immediate funding as proposed by the SFC staff today. Fifth, we would provide and make explicit that construction commencement date and schedules are to be directed by the SFC director with the consultation of the governor to maximize cost savings at or below the projected budgets, optimize Wyoming workforce opportunities at a predictable and manageable level, and provide for as uniform as possible construction throughout the state of Wyoming, giving consideration to other large construction projects, i.e., provide as much as possible for consistent, predictable workforce opportunities, principally for Wyoming workers. The next item, six, is that we make provision for these, particularly these facilities that are in planning, a required stakeholders group for each planning project, responsible for the planning, the group, the project to include legislators, community leaders, parents, school board members, obviously, and others, to meet and provide recommendations for all aspects of the projects to the school board. And what we're seeing here is, frankly, now that we no longer go to elections, we're seeing more and more that school boards are intent on driving these policies without community planning. And they go to their lawyers and write us letters. But, frankly, we need to go back to the notion that in the old days, if you wanted to get a bond issue, you had to get the community's involvement in it. You'd create community groups and get these projects sold on the community. So I want to recreate that requirement to the extent we can. Seven, with respect to the Natrona project, it will be funded on a basis of an option that provides for staggered construction, but also provides for participation by Natrona County School District Number 1 in the planning and contributing the school district's resources for the cost of swing space. Natrona County School District Number 1 shall agree in advance that the CAFS facility will be treated, apologize for my writing, as normal high school square footage and not as alternative high school. Any optional swing space paid for by Natrona shall remain the obligation of the district, consistent with the school facility regulations, which were just described by Mr. Cattler. Eight, the school facility district is directed to construct the Prairie Wind Elementary School District within the Point subdivision and provide for any required waivers for the construction of a three-section elementary school. Now, Director Cattler, I want you to, you know, that'll be debated at whether it be a two-section or a three-section. You obviously need to provide us more input, and we'll be talking to you over the course of the next week. And I think the Laramie County legislators and Vice President Ross, or I guess your majority floor leader, Ross, meet to figure out whether that should be a two-section or a three-section, but let's figure it out and move. This requirement shall terminate in the event that the school facilities director, in consultation with the governor, determines that the point property cannot be purchased for an amount not in excess of the fair market value and at a maximum price of $1.25 million. Madam Chairman, I think that's sort of the consensus of where we're moving toward for Section 300.
All right, committee, would you like to comment on Senator Nicholas's?
Madam Chairman, just one quick one on that point, because I'm not familiar with the area. Could Dorothy Lane be moved to the, I don't know if it's north, I guess, yeah, it is north, isn't it? And provide more room for that land of, in our particular town in Cali, we lost a street to make more room for this elementary school. So could that Dorothy Lane be moved to the north and provide more square footage or land mass for the elementary school? That's an option. Rather than a waiver, I hate to, you know, past projects are going to throw flags out and say, you know, here we go, you know, make exceptions. So, just an option.
Representative
Madam
Patterson.
Madam Chair.
Hello. Oh, Senator Von Platten.
I just want to know if we're going to discuss this next week or tomorrow.
Right.
Or,
oh, yeah.
It'll be fully debated. But
fully.
I mean, if there are things that you want drafted, we probably ought to get it to staff. But I also kind of want to know if it is, in fact, I mean, we might want to just do a straw poll if that's the direction we're hanging.
I just want to be able to make amendment suggestions or something, the verbiage. But.
Well, I think you should be able to take that to the staff as they're putting these ideas together, and so that maybe through the rest of the week, if you could do that, which I guess is tomorrow. But if you could get that to them, and that would, the cleaner the copy is that we start with, that would be the best. Okay, first Representative Edmonds and then Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nicholas, I think this is a thorough and good list. I do want to comment very quickly on the point from someone who very much values the in local control aspect of how we do our schools and finds it very important. I will say I don't represent the people of the point, but I heard from way more of them than I probably should have, and I just heard the general discussion as well around this community, and it was pretty involved. So I particularly like, Mr. Chairman, that we are number six. We're going to do a provision to really get stakeholder groups responsible for planning. I think that is very critical because we're hearing it, and I think it's an important component. It's unfortunate that we're going to have to do the point this way, but I think in the future we may pave the way for more appropriate.
Well, and I think that there needs to be with that, requiring that process, but we need to make certain that the process was done. And now, Director Cattalier.
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, with all due respect, I really think this interferes with the district's long-term plan. And I believe that the school on the Horse Creek site, North Yellowstone site, fits their plan and helps relieve capacity.
I think you make that case to all of the Laramie County legislators.
Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson.
I'd like to hear my colleagues, Representative
yes,
Patterson, on this moving the road and making more room.
Yes. Madam Chairman and Senator Peterson, it was my point. I actually had my own little 300 series drafted that did a couple of things. One is that I think that two things need to happen for that site because it's actually 12.2 acres. And one is that it was originally funded at 16 and now it's 14 million there is what the current balance is, and I believe that one is you should make the 16 whole, and two is that if there I have been informed because we had a Laramie County delegation meeting with our board not too long ago, and they said the cost of moving dirt when you have a 3% grade increases the cost. So it was my goal to put in a total of $4 million to the existing funds. $2 million to bring it back to the 16 to hold a hole, and then $2 million for any unexpected costs involved with moving that on a 12.2 acre lot. And it is a capacity issue because Davis, Hobbs, Jessup, and Anderson all take kids from the point, and all of them are our highest overfunded. And that's your target area that you could take a lot of this in, and I think it fits right with what the district is moving towards.
I think it's critical that, having come from a school area that was made to be on a small parcel, to adjust to that can be very expensive. We have a $1 million retaining wall, in Bighorn, Wyoming, in order to accommodate the needs on that small space. So from having experience, there are a lot of things that you need to look into. I think committee also what we need to do as we're working on the Section 300s, as Senator Nicholas has proposed, that if you as individuals have some things that you've been thinking of and need to have drafted by our staff prior to next week, we will hope to start working the budget about 1 o'clock on Monday, and then I have Matt over there. So just kind of get that information to our staff.
Madam Chair, I think the hope Dave Nelson was going to try to get something drafted before you guys leave for the weekend so you guys could have the weekend to take a look at it.
Right, and so that's what I was thinking. Okay. If there's anything else that they need to add to get to that, that would be great. All right. If there isn't anything, go ahead.
Chairman, I would say this is, look, I could see that on the point issue, I've now conferred, I think, with every Laramie County legislator, and they're unanimously behind this. Now, you got a week before markup and actually all the way through the session to address issues that you think, Director, need to be done. And if the school district wants to meet and confer with their legislators and work out something, that's fine. But, you know, these folks are elected to represent their community, and they're going to do it. And so my recommendation to you is you meet with these folks and you find a way to make a good decision meeting their requirements.
Madam Chair.
Director Cattelier.
I have reached out to Dr. Stock and Mr. Bartlett as well, and will continue to do that over the next few days. I don't know where you are at, but I just wanted to mention a couple of things. 16-to-1 ratios, I don't know how that affects, I expect, construction.
Before you go on, is that something that's statute. Are we going to have to incorporate that into our new planning now? Are we going to have to direct you to do that, or are you going to be able to do that?
Madam Chair, our capacity study will determine
that. Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Good.
Another thing, we did bring back a couple of things on that you asked for last week on positions. So those have been provided to you. You can take a look at those. If you have questions, we're available for that.
Okay. Any other questions of the director? Thank you very much for the school facility department budget. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Tomorrow morning at 8, and we'll begin with the military.